Today is July 23rd, 2005. This is Adam Gregg interviewing Ernest Packard about his World War II experiences. Okay, Ernie, to start out, could you just state your full name?
Ernest Francis Packard, Jr.
And could you say the date and place of your birth?
December 2nd, 1922, Forest Hills Hospital, Boston, Mass.
And where did you go to school before the war?
Hyde Park, about 20 miles out of Boston. It's part of Boston, but that's where I was.
Okay, and did you go into the workforce before you entered the service, or did you go straight from school?
I was working as a yard clerk in the New Haven Railroad in South Boston.
Okay, and what was your experience in the years before the war as the country was fighting through the Great Depression?
Well, it just seemed like it was a mess. But the folks were doing the best they could, and I was just a kid then.
So was your family poor at the time, I guess?
Well, my dad had lost his job on account of the Depression, but he'd worked for an extra year he was in the office, and he was getting everything cleaned up. And my mother had worked in the same office. That's how they met.
Okay. And what were your thoughts as war eventually broke out in Europe before the U.S. got involved?
Just kind of a mess was all. As long as it stayed over there, I didn't care.
So then what were your thoughts when America was attacked at Pearl Harbor?
Whoops. that we'd be in it pretty soon. And just a few days later, they declared the war.
Can you remember your feelings on that day or what you were doing?
I just came home from work, and my mother had the radio on, and my buddy that was living with us, he came in. I was getting undressed, getting ready for bed, because I slept in during the day. And he came and told me what happened. I didn't believe it at first. Couldn't very well disregard it. It was on the radio.
And how'd you feel about it?
I didn't have much feelings at the time. But as a result of that, the National Guard was organized into the regular service. So the English, New England states, all got together and formed the State Guard of the different states. And I joined the State Guard of Massachusetts, and I was in that for about a year before I tried to enlist, and they wouldn't take me because my folks were kind of dependent on me. But they said that they'd get me when they want me, and they did.
So when were you drafted?
April of 1942.
What were your thoughts then?
Well, I hoped that I'd get into the Air Force somehow. I wanted to fly, but I hadn't finished high school, so they wouldn't let me go to flight school. But as things worked out, I landed in the Air Force and was a gunner on a B-17, and so I got what I wanted.
Why did you want to be in the Air Force?
We lived about a block from the airport in the town where I was living at the time. And ever since I was about 12, I'd been running over to the airport. If I saw a guy who heading to his airplane, I'd want to know where he was going and could I go. And they started letting me take the controls a little bit now and then. And one thing went to another, and I got to where there was two fellas there that would let me take their airplane by myself if I'd stay where they could see me from the front of the hangar.
How old were you at that time?
About 12 or 13, something like that, long in there.
And what town did you say this was?
The town itself was Westwood, Massachusetts. We had lived in Hyde Park till my dad lost his job when the place folded up, and we moved up and lived in the same house as my grandparents.
What was the situation there with your grandparents then? Huh? What was the living arrangements and that kind of thing?
Well, we had an apartment upstairs. Their house had an apartment up there. In fact, we lived up there before we left and went to Hyde Park, before I went to school.
And just you and your parents, or did you have any siblings?
I had a brother and a sister, both younger than me.
Okay, do you recall your first days in service?
Well, the first days in service were just about like when I was in the State Guard. It was mostly just marching maneuvers and stuff like that. But the State Guard was so that in case the Germans had landed in New England, which they did, we were supposed to prevent them from taking over bridges or railroads or anything like that. And we had an instructor that was an instructor for the Spanish War over in Spain, Spanish Civil War. And he taught us seven or eight different ways to kill somebody with our bare hands. Never had to do that. And I've always hoped that I never get mad at anybody.
Tell me a little bit more about your training experiences, particularly with the Air Force.
Well, I went to Avon Park, Florida, and joined a crew down there. And we started flying with a B-17 just to get, you know, experience. That was before we went overseas. And we went overseas and went to work.
What was it like training in those B-17s?
I liked it very much. They were a very solid airplane and very reliable.
What was it like the first time you stepped in there?
Oh, I thought it was great because, you know, I was interested in airplanes anyway. The only reason I got to be in the airplanes was when I reported for duty for basic training, they lined us up and they just went down and said, infantry, navy. So, and finally when they got to me, they pointed to me and says, Air Force. That was just what I wanted. So one thing worked to another, and I got to be trained in the B-17.
So did you feel you were well trained when you did get into combat?
Yeah, I knew what I was doing.
And what was your specific job?
I was a ball turret gunner down underneath the airplane in a little 3-foot-9-inch round ball. Two machine guns in there. We could go around 360 degrees and up and down a little better than 90 degrees. So We were a spot that the Germans were advised to stay away from because we were the only plane on the plane that had a gun sight that would compute. All I had to do was put in the wingspan and the fuselage length, and it would just, no matter what we flew or where we flew, I was hitting them. We didn't have any tracers because the tracers didn't follow the right line if it was out to the side. So we just went by the turret. And
how did they train you for that job?
They had a turret mounted on a platform, and we'd climb into it and shoot at targets.
And did you eventually train in the air?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was when I got down to Avon Park and got in with crew. Then when I got over to England, of course, we did some more specific training.
And what was that?
Well, just more in a combat situation.
Okay, and were you trained for any other jobs on the B-17?
Yeah, believe it or not, I was the man they picked. They always went through every crew went through the enlisted men who were in the back of the plane in case anything happened up front. And somebody would take it over and bring it home. And usually they'd land it on their belly. And quite often they'd cartwheel the thing and kill everybody. But they had me flying some practice missions. And I decided that if I ever had to bring the plane home, it was going to come down on its wheels. It wasn't going to land on its belly. And the pilot tried to talk me into landing one time. And I says, no. I says, I won't do that with everybody on board in case it's an accident. But I says, if it comes to it, I says, that's what I'll do.
And did you have any other jobs on the plane?
Relief radio man.
And what'd that involve?
Just being able to use the radio to talk back to the base or something, and had to learn code, which I already knew from previous experience.
Okay, and where did you serve during the war?
We flew out of England over Europe, wherever the Germans were, we flew over there. One mission we flew was the first one that they did of that sort. We flew clear across and landed in Russia. And that was quite an experience in itself.
What was the situation there? What would cause you to fly all the way to Russia?
They flew deep in Germany and was too deep to try to fly back. So we went on and landed in Russia.
What was it like in Russia?
Different, I'll tell you. I mean, the fellas and the women in service, everybody was wearing a uniform. And they were very interested in us, Amerikanskis. We had lots of talks. One time we had to fly to another base because we were afraid the Germans were going to bomb us because they'd bombed another base the night before. And that night they came in to bomb and couldn't find anybody. So they bombed the heck out of a pile of woods because they thought we'd moved the airplanes in there. So we were up about 150 miles from there up to Krakow. And we stayed there for about 3 days and we flew back.
Where in England were you based?
A little town called Horam. H-O-R-H-A-M. It's between Norwich and Ipswich on the west coast.
What did you think of the town there?
The people were very, very friendly. They always referred to us as their boys. They'd have us up for supper or dinner or something different times. Not all of us, but they'd pick a bunch and take us out there.
And what was it like then flying from Horam over to mainland Europe?
Just flying across the channel.
How long did that something like that take?
Not very long. It's only about 20 miles across there. At 160 miles an hour, it doesn't take long.
As a belly gunner, a lot of historians call that a suicide mission. Do you have any close calls?
One time I was sitting there in the turret, and I don't know if it was a bullet or a piece of flak, but it came through and went through the inside of my pants legs and out the other side through my shirt. Never touched me. That's close enough.
How did you react to that?
I didn't realize it had until after we got home and found I had the holes in my shirt and pants.
Any other close calls like that?
No, that was about as close as I wanted to get.
Earlier you were talking about an article that you felt had kind of misrepresented the belly gunner.
This was written by a belly gunner from a B-24, which was a different arrangement than ours. And he claimed that it was a very, very dangerous place. And had no armor plates, except the one that your little plate that you were sitting on. And it had no safety belts or anything. Well, mine, I had my parachute beside me, underneath my arm, so if I ever needed to get out, all I had to do was just open the door, lean back, snap the thing and open, and straighten my legs out. So to me, it was the safest place on the darn airplane, because I didn't have to walk up to the plane and get a parachute on and then jump out the back door, because the plane might be just tumbling through the air.
Okay, and what would you say most of your missions were like? What was your main goal in most of these missions?
It was either a manufacturing town, and we'd go to bomb the manufacturing plant, or it'd be after a bridge or a railroad line, stuff like that.
And how were you able to find those points of attack?
Well, they'd been showed us on a map where it was, and the navigator would take us to it.
And what role did you play in those kind of missions as the belly gunner?
Well, if we were attacked or if anything flying around the outside, I was to shoot them and run. Well, I did.
Did that happen a lot?
Yeah. Sometimes they'd come from underneath, you know, and they didn't like to They didn't like to attack the ball turret because we had a computing gun sight and you couldn't miss.
And what did you think of the capabilities of the German Luftwaffe?
Some of them were very, very good. Some of the planes were really good. And the armament was a lot better than I had. I had two machine guns, and lots of times they had six machine guns and a cannon, or two cannons sometimes.
How many missions did you go on?
35.
How long most of those take?
Oh, anywhere from 4 hours to 12 hours.
Was your plane ever hit by enemy fire?
Oh, yeah.
Can you describe some of those circumstances?
One day it got hit in an engine, and we kind of rocked up on a wing and started down, and I thought we were gone. And I was all set to go out of my turret, and I was just set to give a push, and the pilot said, "Take it easy, fellas, everything's under control." He was going to dive into a thunderstorm down below and blow the fire out, and it worked.
You made it home safely?
Yeah. We always made it home safely.
I'm talking to you right now.
We did have one time we had an anti-aircraft shell go off in the bomb bay with a full load of bombs, but for some reason, none of the bombs went off. Nobody could figure that out. But it blew, there was a catwalk through the middle of the plane that supported the load and everything, and the bomb bays were fastened to it, and it blew a big gap in the catwalk, and the bomb bays of the bomb racks of those things were just swaying back and forth. So I went in from the front end out of the ball turret, and the top turret gunner went out from behind the pilot, and we stood down there straddling that gap and loosened up the bombs and dropped them one at a time. Then we went back and I climbed into the radio room and sat down, and all of a sudden it dawned on me what we've been doing. We've been joking with each other by motions in the meantime. And I turned around and looked into the bomb bay, and the the engineer was looking in from the other end, and he was just white as a dang sheet. I guess I don't know whether I was or not. But we both knew what it was, and we were advised to bail out of the airplane because it was buckling in the middle. And the pilot said, it was under control, so he's going to bring it home. And they told us twice more on the way home to bail out. When he got to the airfield, he asked for instructions on landing. They told him landing denied, take it up, aim it for the channel, and bail out. And the pilot said, "Well, just get out the meat wagon, as he called it, because we're coming in." And we came in, and when we hit the ground, we hit pretty darn hard. The plane broke in the middle, but nobody was hurt.
Any other close calls like that for the whole
plane?
No,
nothing like that.
Nothing like that. You had a lot of close calls, I assume. did your unit take many casualties?
Well, sometimes. I've got a book that tells how many planes went on it and how many casualties were there. And it was up to 30 or 35 casualties. But most times, We seem to have a lot of respect from the Germans, because when they had tried to attack us, we just closed up tight on the in the formation, and they'd had a habit of trying to barrel roll through to break up the formation, and they didn't dare try to break through those formations, because they'd have been blowing themselves out of the sky. So it was a good thing.
Okay. When you weren't flying missions, what were you doing?
Oh, not much of anything. We had to take care of our guns and get them out of the plane and clean them up and everything after every mission. But between missions, we'd go to town and I had a bicycle. We'd ride in on the bicycle to town.
Was your base in Horam ever attacked or come under fire?
Yeah, a couple times. Didn't do any damage, except a couple of holes in the base. But no, they didn't get to do much damage because they didn't get to hang around and make more than one pass.
What was it like to have friends missing or killed?
Kind of hit us where it hurt. But we recognized that it was possible, and occasionally we'd lose somebody. And when I went into barracks, when I joined the group, and they assigned us to a barracks, we were assigned to bunks that had been occupied, and fellas got either killed or wounded or something.
How did you personally handle killing the enemy or the destruction of German bridges or whatever it was, German infrastructure?
Well, as far as shooting Germans down, it was a case of shoot them before they shot me. I mean, that was no deal. I mean, you just had to do it just to protect yourself and the rest of the planes in the formation. Yeah, it was an interesting time.
And how did you feel about the work of the missions damaging the manufacturing capabilities or the infrastructure of the Germans?
Well, if we'd blast places that built fighter planes and things like that, you know. So we thought it was a good thing to do.
What was it that influenced you to keep going day to day? In other words, what motivated you?
I was there, and that was my job. It was risky, but I mean, that was my job.
Simple as that. And what would you say was your single greatest fear?
Getting crippled.
Why do you suppose that is?
Well, depending on how bad the crippling was, but he didn't want to get hurt and couldn't get around or anything like that anymore.
Did you know guys who that happened to?
Oh, yeah.
Were you awarded any medals or citations?
Yeah, the Distinguished Flying Cross, the Air Medal, and the Air Medal 6 times, actually. It's got a silver cluster on it, which means 5 more. And then there was the European Theater Ribbon and the Good Conduct Medal and the Victory Medal.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the use of the atomic bomb over in the other theater?
Well, unfortunately, there were a lot of people killed, but they estimate that it shortened the war by at least a year. Because when they found out that we had more than one of those bombs, they wanted out.
And what implications did that have for you?
We didn't get to be, when the European war was over with Germany, we were being trained to go to Japan, and we never got to go. We got to go home instead.
You seem like you were happy about that.
Oh, yeah.
What were your thoughts on President Roosevelt?
I always thought he was pretty good president. Very efficient president. And he's the one that decided to use the atomic bomb, both of them. By the time we dropped two of them, they decided they wanted to get away from us.
And what about when President Roosevelt died and Truman took over?
Well, I didn't have anything against Truman. He wasn't quite the man that Roosevelt was, but he seemed to be all right.
Okay. When you went into the service, what was your personal situation like? Did you have a girlfriend?
A couple of acquaintances, but that was about all.
Okay, we were talking earlier about how you met your wife. Would you mind sharing that story?
Well, we started out as pen pals. And then when I went into the service, she kept writing to me 2 or 3 times a week. When I got home on furlough, 30-day furlough, I decided I wanted to go see what she was like, and we wound up getting married.
A week later, right?
Yeah, I got into town one Sunday, and we got married the next Sunday. I never could figure out why our folks allowed it, but...
Still with her, right?
Oh, yeah. That was 61 years ago.
Did you stay in touch with your family the same way you were able to stay in touch with Virginia?
Oh, yeah. We write back and forth. I still got a brother and a sister back there and a couple of cousins. But my parents are both gone.
How about during your time in the service, did you get many letters home to your parents and your brothers and sisters?
When I could. We had time occasionally to write letters. Yeah.
Were you able to send as many letters to your future wife as she was able to send to you, 2 to 3 a week?
No, I do about 1 a week.
What was it like to spend a holiday at war?
What do you mean a holiday?
Thanksgiving, Christmas.
Well... They always had something, you know, like Thanksgiving, they'd have a big feed.
What was that like?
Depends on the cook. No, it was good.
What'd you have?
Oh, about all you wanted. Different kinds of meat and all kinds of things. Just like you go home.
Did you ever feel pressure or stress? How would you handle that if you did?
In what way? I mean...
Coming under attack or just getting stressed out because... off the top of my head, just because working so hard?
No. I've never let that kind of stuff bother me.
Even if you felt your life was in danger?
No, that was my job, so I just went ahead and did it. Just hope for the best. Everybody on our airplane had a close call of some kind, but nobody was hurt.
That whole time, no one in your crew was injured, huh?
No. One fella was... I couldn't take my flak jacket, which was two-piece. I couldn't wear that in the turret. So I gave it to the two waist gunners, and they'd stand on the floor because they had armor plate in front of them, but they didn't have anything on the floor. And this one day, flak started busting around, and the left waist gunner just discovered he didn't have it on the floor. He tossed it on the floor and he stepped on it. And you know, when he stepped on it, and picked him right off the floor about a foot.
You mentioned there was some downtime in between missions or some free time. What did you and your fellow soldiers do to entertain yourself?
We'd go to the nearest town, which is just about 6 miles away. And lots of bicycles around. We'd get on a bike and ride in.
Were there ever any entertainers?
Yeah. A couple of times entertainers hit the base. And sometimes that was when we were on a mission.
Remember anybody specific that came?
Bob Hope did, and some woman came with him. I forget who it was. But on the way overseas, we had Bob Hope and Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire all on the same boat.
Same boat with you?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, they were going over to with a USO troop, and they'd have those. They were on the top deck, and they'd take us by turns and mount guard on their door of the cabin, So I'd get to see him, just say hello once in a while.
Do you recall any particularly humorous or unusual events during your time in the service?
No, it'd be mostly just those USO shows. Other than that, it was just regular.
What'd you think of your fellow crew members?
We were a very, very good crew. There was no complaints among us at all.
Were you guys good friends?
Yeah. After we get out of service, the pilot was killed on a training mission for training somebody else. And the radio man, he was up in North Dakota, so I didn't get to see him. And two of the others, three of the others, we wrote after, back and forth to each other, till they died. I'm the only one left.
How many people were on a B-17 crew?
10.
Did you keep a personal diary?
No.
Do you recall the day when the war ended? What was that like for you in Europe?
Well, I was back in the States by that time. And training to go over to Japan. Training on different bombers, B-29s instead of B-17s, bigger ones. But we're still working.
Was there any kind of celebration or anything like that?
Oh yeah, everybody was jumping around, clapping each other on the back and saying, well, that's over with.
When did your own service end?
October 1945.
Do you remember that day, or what were the circumstances?
Well, I just called several of us in and told us we were going home. They didn't make a big thing out of it. They just told us that.
What was the readjustment like to civilian life for you once you got out of the service?
Well, most of the guys I knew had scattered around, and I wasn't in my hometown anymore. I was out here in Iowa. But it was easy to pick up and get back in there.
Did you ever suffer any nightmares or flashbacks when you returned home?
Nope.
How about the GI Bill? Did you make use of that in any way?
Yeah, I used that to get my diploma from school.
Where'd you go to school?
Couldn't tell you now.
What did you go on to do as a career after the war?
Did carpenter work. I learned carpenter work as a teenager with my grandfather, who was a very good carpenter. And I started in doing carpenter work, and then different times I've done different things. I've worked for the operating heavy machinery, and done a lot of things. But mostly I was wrapped up in carpenter work.
How did you end up in Haywarden then?
When I married my wife. And for a while I was, about 2 years we were living down in Sioux City, and I was working for a box factory down there, making cardboard boxes, running the machinery.
So you've been in Haywarden since 45?
44.
Okay, do you feel you took part in the post-war economic boom?
Well, I don't know if I took part in any more than just working.